is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Welcome to Heal DC. This is Joni. It is Monday, June 24, 2024, and we have a very exciting show for you in store. We have two special parts today. We are spending the first part celebrating Dori Ladner and her sister Joyce. Joyce will be with us on the phone for the first half hour. We're going to welcome her in a moment. Not only is this Friday, June 28th, Dori's birthday, born June 28th, 1942, left us physically in March, but still definitely with us. Joyce and Dori are going to be honored this Friday in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and you'll hear in a moment all about it. The second part of the show, we're going to be talking about Gaza. There will be an advocacy day with the D.C. City Council. We'll be hearing from the people organizing that, and then we'll be hearing about a very special event with some artists and musicians and singers taking place this Saturday. And you'll hear from one of the vocalists. She will be singing part of an opera for Palestine. So that's the second half of the show. Stay tuned. And I want to make a quick announcement. We'll be doing some special programming on July 9th in the evening, Tuesday from 6 to 8, about the crisis in D.C. health clinics with Unity Healthcare. You'll hear more about that. But I wanted to make a special announcement that Saturday, July 13th, there will be a community town hall on the D.C. crime bill organized by PACA, Pan-African Community Action Organization. It'll be the harm of crime bills and the future of community power in Chocolate City. Saturday, July 13th, 11 to 4 p.m. At the Rise Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Avenue Southeast. You'll be hearing more about that in the weeks to come on Netflix show and more. I'm very glad that this is happening because many of us, including Netflix show, this show, Aroach Brown, we've been talking about the dangers of this crime bill. So this will be a community town hall Saturday, July 13th. And let's jump right into it. Chuck is with us, so yes, and in a moment you can introduce and welcome Joyce Ladner to the airwaves, but we're going to give a little welcoming music on behalf of Joyce Ladner and Dori. Here we go.
It's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, it's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. It's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Oh, everywhere I go, Lord, I'm gonna let it
And that song is welcoming Joyce Ladner and Dory. Chuck, would you like to give your official welcome to Joyce Ladner?
Yes, I would. We are so pleased to have Joyce Ladner on the line with us. She is a historic person who made history, not only with her sister, but by herself. She did a lot in the civil rights movement in Mississippi, and she has a lot of stories and events and things that happened that affected her life and has made her the person that she is and the character that she has, as well as her sister, Dory. So welcome, Joyce. I don't want to take up all the time because there's lots of questions and lots for you to tell us. Welcome.
Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you here. Well, let's start out with the exciting news about what is happening this Friday in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
There will be an unveiling of a marker on the Mississippi Freedom Trail. These markers have been put up all over the state to call attention to people who were very involved in the civil rights movement and to places of interest, such as the Neshoba County site where the three civil rights workers were murdered. The marker in Hattiesburg, our hometown, will honor Dory and me for our contributions to the movement.
And that is so exciting. That's going to be 10 a.m. this Friday. And, of course, as we said, this is also the birthday of Dory Ladner, and we will be sending you prayers and thoughts. We want to also mention that during this half hour, you are welcome to call in with comments or questions for Joyce, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. And that's going to be a very exciting journey, Joyce, on Friday. Of course, you have many years of stories to share about Dory and you. We've talked about them on PFW in recent months and years, but as you're about to celebrate the first birthday without Dory here physically, but of course she'll be there with you in spirit, what are some of the, this may be too big of a question, but what are some of those stories that you think when people see those Freedom Trail markers, they should know about? Let me just ask you, will those markers be along a certain trail, or how will they be marked?
They are placed at the site of the event that they honor, or the people they honor. For example, they're putting it in Hattiesburg because that's where we got our start, and it's our hometown. But I'd like also to say that another purpose about traveling back to Mississippi is to scatter Dory's ashes. She requested that her ashes be scattered in the Gulf of Mexico, and that we're doing on Thursday. Dory and I had a love-hate relationship with our state of Mississippi. We hated it for all the terrible things that were done to black people. But we loved the people there. We loved our relatives and our friends and so many others whose lives were affected in various ways. So we'll scatter the ashes on Thursday, and then on Friday we'll unveil the marker.
And we will be thinking about you for sure. And you actually grew up, you and Dory, in a place in Hattiesburg called Palmer's Crossing. Can you tell us a little bit about Palmer's Crossing? What was it like for you and Dory?
Palmer's Crossing was an all-black community just outside Hattiesburg. It was four miles from downtown Hattiesburg. And it was an unincorporated community of black people. We had our own school, the preschool named for Oscar the Priest. We had, and then later, Earl Trevelyan School. We had churches, and we had a strong, strong sense of community, surrounded by grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. It was, you know, a lot of people think that segregated communities were horrible, but ours was not. And most of the segregated communities I knew were not. What we lacked were resources, but we were tight knit families and communities that gave us a strong sense of identity, love, and so forth. So I had everything I needed except new textbooks. We received the textbooks from the white school after they'd used them for 5 years. So we were always 5 years behind anyway. We had wonderful teachers who invested every single thing they had in us. So it was wonderful. What I hated about it was that the white people got new schools and we didn't. It was only after Brown versus Board of Education that we got a new school. That happened all over the South. That we got new schools because they were attempting to stave off integration. So that's essentially what I would say about growing up.
And in a moment, we'll jump into the time when you and Dory were a little older, maybe about 19 or 20. But Chuck could jump in, too, if you have a question about Dory's early years.
George, I always enjoyed hearing the story about when Dory went to school and how you ended up going to school with Dory. Share that story with us, please.
When I was about 3 and a half, Dory was 5, and she had started school, and I used to cry every day when she went to school. And one day my mother took the two of us down to the principal's house after school. He lived in our neighborhood. And she asked him if, she said, my little girl Joyce cries every day. Her older sister Dot, we call Dora Dot, goes off to school. Is there any way that you could allow her to come to school to play? And I remember that was one of my earliest recollections, when he looked down at me and I looked up at him, and he was a tall man. And he said, well, you give her a cigar and have her bring it to my office tomorrow, and I'll see what I can do. So we stopped off at the store and got the cigar on the way home. Next morning, Mother dressed us as she was wont to do, like twins. And we marched off to school. We went by Mr. Trevelyan's office, and he said, wait a minute, I'm going to call Miss Jackson here. Well, he called Mrs. Zola Jackson, who was the teacher for the, we called it pre-prima and prima, which was essentially today, I guess, would be pre-K and K. And he told Mrs. Jackson to take me with her. And from that day on, I began learning. And one day, Miss Jackson told me, little girl, coming to my desk every few minutes, asking me, Miss Jackson, is this right? You're going to wear holes in the bottom of in the soles of your shoes. And I didn't know what that meant. but shortly thereafter, Miss Jackson took me to another building where Dot was sitting at a little table with her little friends. And I remember her saying, that's my little sister. And I sat beside her, and she guided me and protected me for the rest of my life.
That's a wonderful story. I know Johnny has some questions, but let me ask you one quick question.
Sure.
You think your efforts and your challenges in the civil rights movement, what were the one or two of the most frightening experiences you had, not Dory, but you had during the time in Mississippi when you were doing all these civil rights movements? What are one or two of the most challenging and frightening times that affected you?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I can't think of what.
Ella, excuse me, Joyce. Can you hear me? We have some callers on the line. I'm sorry, Chuck. I made a mistake of not convincing Joyce that we should do the whole hour with her, because at this point we don't have too much time left. But let's, unless Joyce, you have an answer to Chuck's question, we also want to, or you can answer, then we'll go right to the caller.
Okay, I can stay as long as you want me to. Okay.
Okay, caller, you're on the air. Your name and your question.
This is Rick calling long distance from Germany, ladies, and to Chuck Hicks. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I would ask Miss Ladner if you had any military family who were a positive influence on you during the 60s.
Well, I had a great uncle who served in World War One, and he had us kids watch, listen to Jackie Robinson, to the Brooklyn Dodgers play on his radio. We sat on the porch and listened. And every time Jackie Robinson came to bat, he jumped up and clapped, and we did too. And afterwards, he told us, you girls will have to be the Jackie Robinsons of your day. That was the most profound influence on me.
Thank you, lady.
Okay. So let's go back with kind of tracing some of the highlights of Dory's journey. And I know she often talked, of course, about the horrific killing of Emmett Till, which was in 1955, I believe, August 28th, and that would have made Dory how old, Joyce?
I was 11 and going on 12, and she was 12 going on 13.
And that, of course,
that would have been perhaps the most frightening experience, Chuck, that we had. We Dora and I slept together, and we would pull the cover over our head at night when we went to bed, because out of fear that the men who killed Emmett Till or some like them would come into our house and drag us out, or drag my father out.
Definitely, and Dora did talk about that a lot. And so then I want to jump perhaps into Jackson State when you guys were expelled from Jackson State in 1961. That would have been, about 6 years after Emmett Till was killed. Do you want to share with us a little bit about why were you expelled from Jackson State? What were you doing that was so terrible?
Well, we often went by Mega Evers' office. It was a block from the campus. And we'd ask him. We had met him years earlier when one of the ladies at our church took us to Jackson to statewide NAACP meetings with her. And we were 11, 12 years old. And then I wrote him a letter when our NAACP youth chapter was first formed, and asked him if he would come to Hattiesburg to our next meeting. And I have a copy of that letter and his response, and he did come. That was in 1958 or 59. Anyway, on one of our visits to his office, he told us that, I'll tell you a secret, but you got to not tell anyone at all. And he said, there's going to be a sit-in at the public library. But did he tell us where? Anyway, and we immediately said, can we join it? Can we be in it? And he said, I don't know what I would tell your mother, because you would get arrested. He had come on campus earlier the week before and brought me some money. He said, I was in Hattiesburg in a grocery store and I met your mother, and she sent this money to you. he'd never met mother in his life. But anyway, he said, what you can do is organize the students to have a sympathy protest after the Tougaloo College students have been jailed. And we did just that. Along with a lot of other students, we gathered at night, and the president of the college came on campus, and he was screaming, and he stopped beside me and my two roommates, and he knocked one of the girls down. And the next day, let me skip forward. We protested the next day, chased with police dogs. Then we the president of the college declared an early spring break. When we got back to campus, the dean called us in and told us that, he said, I know you've been going up to Meg Evers' office and stirring up that mess on campus. You're responsible for doing it. And he said, and you're expelled. You cannot come back next year. It was toward the end of the school year. And we jumped up and said, we don't care. We hate this school. You're stricter than our mother. And we're going to Tougaloo College. And that's how it happened.
Wow. Quite a story. And then jumping into Tougaloo, and let's talk a little bit about Medgar Evers, which we've talked about many times on this program, and Dory's talked about it a lot, that Dory was having dinner. She worked with Medgar Evers. Did she and you both become a member of the NAAC Youth Council in Hattiesburg?
Yes.
And when
did
happen? Was that?
That was in late 58 or early 59.
Wow. So you were, I can't do the math quickly enough, but you were still in your teens.
Yeah, I was 15 and she was 16.
NAAC Youth Council in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And I believe that's where you both met the state president at the time, Medgar Evers. And I know Dory worked with him a lot, and she tells a story about how she was having dinner with Medgar Evers. I think you were not at that particular dinner, and they said goodbye, and they would talk soon. And within the hour, Medgar Evers was assassinated in front of his home. So, of course, that had a profound impact. Actually, I remember it as a child. it was very frightening, upsetting. But to know that you and Dory may as well witness that in person. So, do you want to share anything about that assassination of Medgar?
I would have been there, except it was in the summer, and I was working full time with SNCC that summer as a field secretary, and SNCC sent me to a student conference in Wake Forest College, name of the college outside Chicago, when I got the word that he had been killed. And I told Ruby Doris Robinson, who was the assistant executive director of SNCC, that I want to go home now. I got to go home. And she said, no, you stay there and tell the story. Tell the students what life is really like. But Dory was there, and she and Eleanor Holmes, who was in law school at the time, Dave Dennis, who was director of CORE in Mississippi, and a few others were at the Elk Lodge having dinner that night with him. And they were joking around with him. Someone said, he said, y'all come go with me. And somebody said, no, man, you're too dangerous. You might get us killed. And he went home and was gotten out of his car in his carport, and he was assassinated.
Yes.
That left a huge hole, because we had known him since we were kids, you know, and had just been so powerfully influenced by him. Anyway, what more can I say?
Yeah, of course, and I'm sure you remember that assassination too, as well.
Yeah, I just read in the news today that Secretary of Transportation Buttigieg was in Mississippi, and he announced that a big grant from this infrastructure money President Biden got passed will go to fix the property around and the streets and so on around Meg Evers' house that is now on the National Registry.
Wow.
It's open to public business.
And again, you're listening to Joyce Ladner, and we're talking about Joyce and her sister Dory, who left us March 11th this year, and physically, but it will always remain with us here at WPFW in Washington, D.C., and in the universe. Her birthday is on Friday, and Joyce and her daughter Yodit will be going to Hattiesburg to be there when Joyce and Dory will be honored with a freedom marker in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We're going to stay a little bit longer with Joyce before we get to our next segment, because this indeed is a very special moment. And let's stay.
If I may say something, Dory's daughter and Dory's grandson, who see you, who is 14, and my grandson Reginald, who is 14, and my son are also going, and we have lots of family, huge family, and that will be there. And my classmates and schoolmates have the annual reunion during the same time, so I'll get a chance to see people I haven't seen in 60 years.
Wow. That is wonderful. And when are you coming back, Joyce?
I won't be gone long.
So we're going to have you on again soon, or maybe even next Monday for you to share. I wish we could have gone, me and Chuck, and brought a cameras with us and microphones to really capture it. And of course, this past weekend, I know that the SNCC, and for those younger people don't know what SNCC was or is, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, had a gathering in Mississippi to honor, I think, the anniversary of the Freedom Summer. And Joyce can explain in a moment what Freedom Summer was. But also, I believe it was June 22nd or around that time in 1963 when the three civil rights workers were assassinated. And so there with the gathering with SNCC this weekend, I think, was also to honor the three civil rights workers.
Joan, if I may say something here. I knew two of the guys who were murdered. The third one was going to Mississippi for the first time. But I knew Nicky Swerner from Brooklyn, and I knew James Chaney from Meridian. And that aside from Emmett Till, that was the first time I had known someone my age, I guess, who was killed because of their activities in the movement. And that hit all of us very hard.
Of course, and Goodman was from New York City. I had the opportunity to get to know his mom later, who was very much involved with Pacifica and was a frequent guest on the WBAI station and on this show. So we will always remember the three civil rights workers. And Joyce, let's spend a little bit of time talking about how you and Dory became involved in SNCC and engaged with the Freedom Riders and all of that was going on in 1961. Do you remember when you first signed up for or got involved with SNCC?
Well, it was our first day at Tougaloo College in the fall of 61, and we rolled up on campus. We saw this huge number of young people sitting on the grass, lounging around, and there were blacks and whites. I remember asking a girl on campus, "Who are those people?" She said, "Those are Freedom Riders," and she said, "They've come back to Mississippi to go to fulfill a trial date. I remember meeting John Lewis and just a lot of freedom riders. I didn't know who they were at the time, but I came to know and be friends with a lot of them. So we started going into Jackson, which is 8 miles away, to the movement office. There was a house on Rose Street that was called the Freedom House, and that's what we called all the SNCC houses where people stayed. And every Saturday we went there and did voter. We fanned out from there to do voter registration work in Jackson. Diane Nash was living there. James Diane Nash Bevel, and some other freedom riders who decided to stay on in Mississippi after they got out of jail. And that's when we first got a sense of any organized activity, and we were sold on it. We Dury dropped out of Tougaloo 3 times to go to work with the movement. She said, "Joyce, I can't study while my people are suffering."
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is jumping into time, where in time this was, but of course, Dory talked a lot about Guyot.
Oh, yes.
Lawrence Guyot, who was also a member of this WPFW family and a very close friend of mine as well. And Dory and I would often talk with Guyot on the radio. His birthday is coming up, I believe it is July 12th or early in July. Maybe it's the 17th. But Dory talked about how she and Guyot were very involved with recruiting Fannie Lou Hamer into the movement. And I believe we're perhaps both with Fannie Lou Hamer in jail. But tell us a little bit about the story of Fannie Lou Hamer and her relationship with Dory.
I don't think Guyot was involved. I have to go and double check that. But Guyot was a Tougaloo College student. And one day Dory asked him to go into Jackson to the civil rights office. And he went and he never left. I mean, he was sold then. And he was involved. By the way, a historic marker was unveiled for him in his hometown of Pas Christian a year ago.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, I met Mrs. Hamer in 1962. And Dury was one of the handful of people who went to the Delta and started voter registration in the summer of 62. And she, the first group of people they took to the courthouse to attempt to register to vote involved Mrs. Hamer. And Mrs. Hamer got back to the plantation where she lived and had worked for years. The owner came to her house and told her she had to go down the next day and withdraw her name from attempting to register. And she said, "Mr. Whatever his name is, I didn't register for you. I'm trying to register for myself." And so he told her that she had to get off the plantation that night. And Dury and some others, Bob Moses and Dave Dennis and others, found a truck and moved her furniture to a friend's house until she found a permanent place to live. Now, mind you, her husband, Pap, everybody called him Pap, was told he had to stay on the plantation and bring the crops in because he plowed the fields. But Mrs. Hamer said that that day set her free, and she preferred working with the young people in SNCC to the NAACP, older people and so on, because we were unafraid.
Because the young people aren't afraid.
Mm. Right.
Wow.
Well, you know, I should say that we were afraid all the time. But it's a matter of your fear, you know, courage is not the absence of fear, but the ability, I say, to prevail in spite of it. So you know, that's what happens. You take calculated risks, and you decided to go forth, even though it's dangerous, you know.
Absolutely, as young people are doing today. Certainly within many arenas, but definitely when we think about Gaza and Palestine, a lot of courage on the part of young people, which we will hear from one or two of them before we close. But Joyce, I've heard you talk about Dory, what she did as she served as the SNCC project director in Natchez, Mississippi. I think that was around 1964. I believe that was something you were very proud of. Tell us a little bit about what Dory did in Natchez.
There were very few women who were project directors. And Dory was one, and she went to arguably the most dangerous place in Mississippi, Natchez. And they were out canvassing to try to get people to register to vote every day. But they got these early in the morning, 3 a.m. phone calls of harassers, and they were constantly harassed. And one night, and they would say things like, you can do one of two things. You can come outside and we'll shoot you and kill you, or you can stay inside and we'll burn you up. And they had bombed the store next door, or the building next door to where this Freedom House was. And they had gotten the wrong place. They were trying to bomb Dory and the others. And one night, Dory said she got tired of them calling. So she asked the woman on the phone, women harassed too. She said, do you like Little Richard? The woman said, yes, Dory, I like Little Richard. And she said, well, you know he's coming to Jackson, and I can get you tickets. Oh, Dory, you would do that for me? Oh, I'm just so happy that you get your ticket to see Little Richard. And Dory said that the phone call stopped, and there was no Little Richard coming to Jackson. But wow. She just got the caller off her back.
Wow. What a story. Go ahead, Chuck.
George, can you tell me, share with us, when do you remember when you first registered to vote? Where were you?
I didn't register. I was registered by court order. I attempted to register 3 times when I was a senior in college in early 1964. Started January 20th, 1964. What happened is that we had to pass a literacy test, and there are two essay questions. One was, what are the duties of a good citizen? And another asked you to interpret a section of the United States Constitution. Mind you, I was a senior in college, and I dare say I was far more literate than this registrar who refused to register any black people. So ultimately, Dora was part of a lawsuit filed with the Justice Department that they found Theron Lynn, the county registrar, guilty of discrimination, and they retroactively registered all the people he had, black people he had denied.
Hmm. Wow.
That's an interesting thing that lots of people don't know, that when they suits were filed and people got registered retroactively because the county registrar who was white wouldn't register. Right? I don't care what you said or what you did or how much you knew, you were going to fail.
I was an honest student, and it didn't matter as long as your face was black. Oh,
that's right.
One of the things I remember, though, is that on the duties of a good citizen, but the second or third time I tried to register, I knew he was going to fail me, so I wrote that a good citizen is one who obeys just laws and disobeys unjust laws. And he and his secretary just stared me down. He took my application back over. I was standing at this counter. And they would look down at what I'd written and then look at me, look down and look at me. They just, that went on for quite some time. But I was not registered to vote. But in some counties, especially up in northern Mississippi, they would ask you how many grains of sand are in a quart jar or how many bubbles are in a bar of soap. I mean, just nonsense.
What'd you say? I couldn't catch what you said, Joyce.
What I said was that up in the Delta, they would ask you people to who were trying to register to vote how many grains of sand are in a quart jar or how many bubbles are in a bar of soap.
Wow.
Now, mind you, no white person had to take the literacy test. It was designed only for blacks.
That's right. That's something that's mentioned a lot, at least for some folks in our generation, me and Chuck. We've heard this over the decades. So it's quite disgraceful. And we have about a few more minutes left because we need to bring on one guest very quickly, and then we're almost out of time anyway for the hour. So tell us, Joyce, anything more about those early years in Mississippi before both you and Dory left in the 60s with SNCC, or anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye for today?
Yes. We went all over Mississippi trying to register people to vote. You see, I was a full-time student. I dropped out of school for about a week, and I went back. And the registrar, when I went back, I told him I wanted to re-register. He said, well, you don't have to do anything because I knew you were coming back. But you weren't going to stay out long. I had such a burning desire to be the first in my family to graduate from college. And I was always kind of intellectual plus activist. I dabbled in both. But I never lost. I mean, I was always in the movement. Dory was very, one of her strengths was she felt things very, very deeply. She was very emotional about suffering of people.
And she
the needs of black people tugged at her so strongly that she couldn't study. She went back and finished her degree in the early 70s, or in the 70s, and then came on to Washington to Howard University School of Social Work, where she got her master's. But I was, one time Dory and I decided that we were going to dress up and go to the inauguration reception of Governor Ross Barnett, who was a viper of a racist. So we got dressed up. We were at Tougaloo. And we went and stood in line with all these white people, and they kept staring at us, staring us down. And then eventually the cop came up and asked us, what are you doing here? He said, we're going to the reception. You can't go. He said, well, he's our governor, too. And they told us that they would arrest us if we didn't leave the line. Dory did a lot of traveling for SNCC had campus travelers where we went north to drum up support among white students on white campuses. She was at every major demonstration in the country. I mean, every major march, I should say. I missed a couple of them, but she was at all of them. She had this unquenchable thirst for knowledge. She was very, very smart, and for freedom.
And, of course, she was also a lover of music, which was one reason she loved WPFW so much and could be heard on Lance Reynolds' show Saturday morning, and used to call up a lot of the music hosts and talk with them. And one thing Dory and I talked a lot about is her relationship with Bob Dylan. Of course, Bob Dylan, I think, was one of the first people to write a song about the killing of Emmett Till, and that was played in New York City Pacifica radio station. Dory and
he wrote a song about Dory too.
Yes, he did write a song about Dory too, and we played that on the air. We'll play it again. And
Outlaw Blues.
Yes. I hate to say this, that we are out of time. I really should not have. I should have insisted from the get-go that we have Joyce on for the hour. Joyce, we're going to have you on back very soon, maybe this Monday. You can come back or sometime very soon and share with us about the celebration in Hattiesburg this Friday morning at 10 a.m. And, of course, the tribute to Dory that you'll be doing Thursday afternoon. We love Dory very much. She's part of our family. And I'm going to stop before I start to cry. Let's go out with a little bit of Fannie Lou Hamer before we bring on our last guest. Okay, we're going to be letting the light shine for Dory and for Joyce this Saturday as she gets honored with a Freedom Marker. And we have a few minutes to welcome our next guest. Emily Siegel has been waiting. She's with the DC Ceasefire Coalition, and we're going to bring her on next week, but she's going to talk about July 2nd Advocacy Day. Or Emily, can you say in one sentence what will be happening on July 2nd?
Sure. On July 2nd, we're going to be having a DC for Ceasefire Now Advocacy Day from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the DC Council, the Wilson Building.
And for more information?
For more information, you can go to either our Instagram, which is DC, the number 4, Ceasefire.
Okay, real quick.
Yep, that's
it. Okay, I'm sorry, Emily, but
we
had originally planned to have the next guest on for quite a while. We will be bringing her back. She's going to be involved in a special event this Saturday, which is why we want to speak with her now. Farouz Fotti, we had her dad on a few months ago. She's part of a beautiful family of musicians, originally from Ramallah in Palestine. So welcome, Farouz.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry to squeeze you in. We will have you back.
No worries. So tell us. Hear all this amazing work.
Yes. Because we have very little time, let's talk about what is happening this Saturday.
So this Saturday, June 30th at the Black Cats, there's going to be a fundraiser for UNRWA USA. I'm a founding member of Melikat al-Dabka.
Wait. Tell people what UNRWA is. Some people may not know.
Sure. So UNRWA USA is the nonprofit 501c3 based in the United States that raises funds for critical humanitarian programs and services, education, food assistance, and mental health for Palestinian refugees. And they work with UNRWA, which is a United Nations based relief organization.
Whose funds had been cut recently, correct?
Exactly.
So that's why this fundraiser is significant. And tell us where the Black Cat is.
So the Black Cat is on U Street, which is in the historic...
Yes, you, people know... I'm sorry, I have to speed you along because we have...
Sure, no worries, no worries.
It's on U Street, U and what's the cross street?
I believe it's 14th is the cross street, yes.
Okay, and tell us about some of the performers that will be... people can hear. The event is at what time?
It's at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. And of course, that's this Saturday, which is the same day as the Poor People's March. Or people might be hanging out there and continue to hang out for this 8 p.m. concert. Tell us about some of the, I know you were telling me about at least two of the performers, including your group. So tell the listeners about you and also the dance group.
Sure. So Melika Teldepka, I'm the founding member. It's Melika Teldepka means Queens of Depka, and we will be headlining the performance. We are the first all-female Depka troupe in the DC area, DC metropolitan area. And in addition, we will be performing with Dem el Batikh, which means the blood of the watermelon. And, you know, I hope listeners know about the significance of what the watermelon means in the plight for the Palestinian people. And Dem el Batikh is a social justice-oriented music collective of artists that challenge the representation stereotypical representations of Arabs, and I am a professional opera singer. I will be performing as a classical screamer, which I've coined to really take opera and merge it with a social justice initiative. Unfortunately, opera is not a medium that historically does this, and this is something that I'm trying to initiate, and we'll be performing at the Black Cat this Saturday.
And we will be hearing a little bit of your singing of the opera for Palestine in a moment. But tell us about what other performers or artists people can hear on Saturday evening.
Sure. So in addition, we will be performing with two different indie rock bands, Bottom Top and Panda God. And in addition, we will be hearing from the amazing Palestinian-American poet, Zeina Azam, who will be reciting her original poetry. And other members of Dem el Batikh include Rowan Maarouf, who is an Egyptian-American singer-songwriter who will be performing her original music, as well as Sonia May and Alat Abdulbai, who are amazing instrumentalists and singers that will be performing traditional folk Palestinian and Arabic music.
Wow, that's quite a quite a list. We are going to go out with your singing, a little clip of your singing opera for Palestine, and you can repeat one more time where the event is on Saturday. But I just want to say, as someone who heard about opera a lot growing up in New York City, I was quite taken by your singing of opera for Palestine, because the grief in opera that's inherent, I think, comes through more strongly when we're talking about the tragedy in Palestine. And of course, listening to your beautiful voice is quite moving. So just one more time, where can people hear you on Saturday?
So this Saturday at the Black Cat on U Street in Washington, D.C., June 30th at 8 p.m. For a fundraiser for UNRWA USA. We hope to see everyone there.
I think that is June 29th, I believe.
I'm sorry, June 29th.
June 29th, yes, June 29th. Saturday, which is also the Poor People's Campaign.
29th,
okay, let's go. Saturday. We want to have, we have 1 minute left. Thank you very much, Magic Mike.
So
let's hear Opera for Palestine.
Oh,
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Rise Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, and reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Laytonburg, Maryland, featuring the Proverbs Reggae Band with you. Details, WPFWFM.org.
This is movement time, and when it's movement time, we can all be together.
Reverend Dr. William Barber.
We are here to announce on June the 29th at 10 o'clock on Pennsylvania and 3rd, we are calling for the Mass Poor People's Low-Wage Workers' Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls, June 29th, 2024. We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol up and trying to tear democracy down. We need a picture of folk trying to build a democracy up and lift up all people, regardless of who they are. June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
It's attorney Nikichi Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a new talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikichi Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the right of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means.